return we've been waiting for is finally here. One of the sport's most notorious icons is stepping back in the octagon this Saturday. DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the UFC, is giving you a free shot at huge cash prizes. For this weekend's fight, DraftKings is offering new players a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with first deposit. If you haven't tried it yet, fantasy MMA is easy to play. Just pick six fighters, stay under the salary cap, and pile up points for advances, takedowns, and more. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to compete for a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Plus, don't forget about football playoffs, where DraftKings has even more money up for grabs this weekend. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code THPN to get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes throughout this weekend. That's promo code THPN to get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes, only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
This is the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk on every team in the NHL.
This is the Broadway Boys podcast through the Hockey Podcast Network, and Andy and I are back with Season 2, Episode 12. As hashtag FireDQ trends on Twitter, Kako packs his bag to join Lias, the Tony D Bridge was shut down yesterday due to structure issues, and the curse of Mark Stahl lives strong as Johnson slowly moves his way up the lineup and joins Fox on the second D pairing. But first, Andy, I need to ask you, how are you doing?
Man, it's been a hell of a couple of days from going from a letdown of the anticipation for their home opener and the first hockey game in a while. First overall pick, Alexi Lafreniere in the lineup. Keandre Miller actually making the team out of camp. The expectations were so high. And to come out against your crosstown rivals in the Islanders and absolutely look like you've never met each other before and that you were playing, rec league drop in hockey, it was such a disappointment and a letdown. And obviously, as anyone who's paid attention to Rangers social media and Twitter in the last few days knows, that it was not pretty, the reactions from around the fan base. But then to go on to then follow it up with the performance they had last night, to get that feeling you were looking for and almost completely flip the script. I think it's one of those things that there's a lesson to be learned here, but there's still also a lot to unpack because you've seen both extremes. So I guess figuring out what that means for where the middle is for this team is, that's the tricky thing. But I'm doing good. I'm happy Rangers hockey's back. And I'm obviously happy now that after two games, they're 1-1, and we've seen at least what they're capable of, for better or worse, in both directions.
Yeah, I sent out a tweet to Vince yesterday during the game, and he was he loves to show up the fans, and all the people that were raining fire against the Rangers on Thursday, now Vince was kind of shoving it in everyone's face, which is fine, because I feel like Vince is like the middleman who takes all the heat, and he's just kind of like, don't shoot the messenger. But then he kind of likes to slam the fans a little bit that overreact. But here's the thing. The Rangers played a garbage game. Maybe one of the worst games I've ever seen them play in the past two seasons. And then they go and play last night one of the better games I've seen them play. A full 60 minutes. I mean, there was at no point did I think the Rangers were playing poorly. The problem is inconsistency. And the inconsistency falls on the coaching, which is why I feel like so many people are against DQ and why he's making so many enemies right now, is that we're sick of playing this roller coaster hockey. Like, we need to find our identity. We need to find our system, and we need to play an even keel game. I'm not saying we have to win every game, But I think the fans don't want to see us just get absolutely shellacked and then go and play and like we're an all-star team. And then the next day we get shellacked and then we play like an all-star team. You don't want to see that. That's a sign of a bad hockey team and a bad coached hockey team. So I think, you know, I think right now Ranger fans need to first off take a deep breath because it is only game two, and that includes me too. But your concerns should be heard, and like you have a right to be mad. I mean, it's not okay what the Rangers did game one. Like, you cannot come out of the gate like that. I mean, you can blame it on youth, but you can blame it on, you know, whatever the hell, no training camp, you know, no preseason games. It is what it is, but we're all being judged. This is the varsity. No more time for JV excuses. This is the varsity. I don't care how many NHL games you have under your belt. There are no preseason games. This is it. They all count. They're all worth 2 points. So I really don't want to hear the excuses. But, you know, I'm glad that we came out and, you know, we punched back the Islanders because, you know, I think that's what made it, I think, a little bit worse, too, was that it was against the New York Islanders. And you cannot be losing like that to the Islanders.
Yeah, I think I've obviously had a lot of time to sit on it, and especially seeing how they played last night in their redemption game. You know, it's helped crystallize maybe some of my feelings and thoughts about that first game. And I think it's tough to really encapsulate, because on the one hand, you know, listen, there is an element of truth to the fact that, like, this team has so much potential, obviously, but since they are still young, that it's, I think, people expecting just, you know, when you're adding these guys, you know, especially, you could just sense that between Alexi and Keandre just really feeling out the game at times last night. Hell, even some of the younger guys, Hedl and Kako, it was just, it's one of those things where that there is no excuse, because for this team, it's like you said, it's not so much that they lost. It's the fact that there's been a trend of them not showing up prepared for games. And I think the other concern is that for all of talk of, you know, Quinn being a development coach, that they don't see it's when there doesn't seem to be a structure that if on nights where they don't have it, that they know that if I'm in trouble or I don't have my skating legs or whatever, this is where I'm supposed to put the puck. This is where I can safely make a dump, where I can, you know, live. The Rangers are a team that can't coast. They're, you know, some teams are so good that even if they just don't have it, they can coast and still make it to OT or the shootout. You know what I mean? Because right. They have structure. And this Rangers team, they're either going to have their skating legs and their superior talent, because if you look at just the terms of skill now on this team, it's ridiculous, is going to win out. But the problem is it takes a lot of skating legs. It takes a lot of skill and improvisation. And they're not going to have that, you know, for a full season. You know, 82 games or 56, whatever we're playing this year. And I think that's the problem. I think at some point you want to see like a game. You don't want it to be like either the whole, because I think that's the thing with the Rangers. It's not like, you know, it's like these guys were bad, but these guys were good and it worked out and they had a structure. It's either everyone's pulling the rope and they're amazing and they're exceeding expectation, or they're just everyone. It just one cog is not working and then everyone else is just lost. You know what I mean? But obviously you saw what that meant last night. And listen, I will give for the hashtag fire DQ crowd. Listen, I still have my concerns about his system play. But I mean, right now, if you look what he's done with Buchnevich the last few seasons, I think for me anyway, and I'm very critical of David Quinn at times, but I think that's a clear example of him getting through to a player and helping him unlock his potential, because the Buchnevich we saw last night was an absolute monster, you know, huge game. Three points, 2 goals and an assist, and was just, yeah, he was just playing like Buchnevich. And I don't even think, I think like it's kind of hard to say because it's all hindsight, like, oh, he would have ended up here anyway, but it's just the puck hound and the physical element he's added to his game and the way he's finally figured out, clicked how, you know, because it's like the last few seasons, he's always had the soft skill and the deft touch and the playmaking ability and the sneakiness. But he's just, and then the last few seasons, he's kind of been focused more on getting that physical element to his game, but he's never been able to unlock using two in concert at once. And last night, he was all that. He could turn it on at the flip of the switch. And, you know, everyone who said it coming out of camp that he looked like the, you know, the best Ranger in camp, like, it tracks. And if he plays like this season, he's going to be hard to stop and he's going to be a monster. So, and that bodes well as long as you keep him and Mika together. You know what I mean? Or hell, even if you have to put him with Panarin for stretches. But, you know, I think Quinn deserves a lot of credit for that. But again, Ranger fans are upset because some of the same troubling trends that you've, maybe you half expect them to eventually get a handle on or grow out of, they haven't stopped. So I think, you know, I think it's more about you see the tantalizing potential on this team. But if you see these things, it's like you have it flagged in the back of your memory. Like, it doesn't matter how good we are, if these things still continue to plague us after all this time, is it going to plague us when we're finally, our window is firmly open and we're actually trying to make it count? So yeah, it's a concern.
Yeah, and another, you know, concern of mine is his double standard. And, you know, I obviously had a lot of time to look into this over the last, you know, few days, because, you know, being stuck with COVID, all you have is pretty much the internet, and New York Rangers hockey is basically all I look at right now on the internet. So, you know, watching that first game, you're looking up and down the roster, you're trying to find a silver lining. And I thought the silver lining was Julien Gauthier. I thought he played a phenomenal game. I thought he was our best forward and our best player overall, like by a long shot. And then he gets demoted to the fourth line and, you know, last night only played, you know, just over 7 minutes, 7:03. And I just look at it and I'm like, where does he pull this out of his hat? Like, what's his objective here? I mean, like, I honestly don't know, like, when he says he does it off of merit-based system and then he demotes our best player and then promotes our worst player in Jack Johnson, I just don't get it. And granted, Johnson's minutes went down a lot. You know, they went from 20 minutes to 13 minutes. I just don't get, like, where he comes across, like, promoting some guys and demoting others. And it's just crazy. I mean, and what'd you think of Gauthier?
Yeah, I thought he was... In the first game, he was on a night where everyone stunk. I thought him and Rooney, and I'll say to a lesser extent, Brett Howden, who, you know, I do want to talk about in a second, because I think I owe Brett a little bit of an apology, because I think through two games, he's actually been pretty good, even though I think still he's, you know, and granted, he is only playing like a fourth line minutes, but, and penalty kill, but he's been good when, you know, at doing his thing. As long as he's in that containing that role, then he's, you know, I will stop harping on the poor kid, because I do think he looks more assertive, stronger, faster, getting to pucks more and actually doing good things with it. You know, I don't know if he'll ever create much, but no, yeah, Julien Gauthier drew in that first game. He uses speed. He drew a penalty, I think, at least one. You know, he had a breakaway opportunity. The team was flat and he was one of the only guys I thought was trying to back guys up and move his legs and everyone else. And so it's kind of weird that he does get, that he does get demoted. I think my only thing, though, I guess to counter my own point, is that as much as I like Gauthier, I haven't seen much creativity or ability to, once he does good things directly, but unless he's trying to drive the net or doing stuff, I don't see his ability to find his teammates much yet. He doesn't really have that. Him and Laff, I would have liked to see a little. I saw Lafreniere try a few things with him, and just Gauthier just not being ready or not being in the right spot. But it's a shame, because if you're going off merit and effort on a night where almost everyone was bad, he was one of the only few people I'd say was, oh, he was decent to actually good. And so, you know, even if it's just to, you know, to try to make an example of some people, and yet, you know, for no fault of his own, for being one of the only people who cared to get demoted. Yeah, it's kind of sucks. But I will say this, I mean, for all the flack, there was a lot of questions about what he was doing, and it seemed to work. Guys were finding each other and they were working in concert. So I don't know if long term, I think these are the lines and the pairings I would roll, but you know, you can't do, there's not much he can do. He can't play, you know, Quinn can't play for these guys. So he did what he could and he rattled things up, and I guess it got through, and he, you know, Well, I'm sorry. What were you saying?
No, I will say this. I mean, our top six are pretty much set in stone. Like, those are your horses. You have to ride them eventually. You know what I mean? I'm not saying put them down on the fourth line, but, you know, Julien Gauthier probably could have played, you know, on the third line. But you know what? After seeing last night, I just felt like everyone played well. And I feel like Phil DiGiuseppe is going to play his way into a starting position because the kid's a spark plug. And I don't know if it was just because the entire team was playing with a little bit more energy. Oh, I shouldn't say a little bit more energy, a lot more energy, that he looked good. But I tell you, man, there's something to say about his attitude and, you know, his, you know, the way he, you know, holds himself on the ice. He seems like he loves being out there. He's always doing the right thing. He's mixing it up. He causes turnovers. He just plays with a lot of energy, and I love it. And I really do think it fits this system where Quinn wants to be a little bit more aggressive on the puck. And I feel like he's just a perfect player for that. And I know he's not going to play anything more than fourth line, maybe third line minutes. And if someone goes down with an injury, you can, you know, put him up with the top six. But, you know, I do think he deserves to be on this starting roster, you know, at least, you know, for another few games.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I think if you're going to eventually, you know, at times last year, he was good, especially when put with him and Hedl seem to have a little, they can click somewhat. And even him and Kako at times, because he does the work, because Kako's kind of that, I'm going to stand back in a shooting position or kind of float so then I can get to it in soft ice and then use my puck possession skills. And yeah, I will say this, Kako, he looked much better last night. And I think he had the best statistical from his underlying, you know, numbers game of his career. You know, it's been crater. But when I think that when him, Hedl, and DiGiuseppe were on the ice, they outchanced the opposition like 8-1, 8 scoring chances to 1. So that's good to see. And you saw him finally start to make you. And that's the thing. I think he's still, it's kind of hard to wrap your head around because we drafted him last year. But if you think about it, Lafreniere, I would say at this point in his career, is probably still more NHL ready than Kako potentially, although he still seems to be figuring out. So I think this benefits all parties. Yeah, it stinks that Kako might have to play in the third line, but if that's an atmosphere where he can continue to get comfortable, he looked hell of a lot. He was shooting more. He looked hell of a lot more assertive and like recognizing his spots. You know, you saw him read the play it was developing and quick, like he sprinted to his spot and he pivoted his back foot and let off that one timer. That's the other thing, is that I thought at times last year his shot was a muffin. He had a pretty good rifle shot on that. So, and if you remember when he's playing over in Liga, he scored a lot of goals from, you know, the right circle with a big one timer or a slap shot. So if he can add that to his arsenal and he can back people up, or at least, you know, you have to respect that for his game moving forward. I think, you know, we're going to have another weapon in our quiver. So that's good for him. But yeah, I just think overall that line, to your point, DiGiuseppe, as I think in that role, as long as he's not facing, you know, top six, he's perfect. He can do, he perfectly does what the grunt work that a Jesper Foss would do for like the Panarin line. You know what I mean? Like just, he's going to allow he's going to do the stuff that maybe Kako's not fast enough or not up to the rigors of the board battle yet, with as he's still growing. And you know, Hedl is he wants to be able to use his individual skill to back off opponents, so sometimes going into the corners and just trying to, like, you know, dig out pucks is not what he's all about. He wants to be the guy who, once it squirts out, he grabs it and quickly, you know, because he's so quick, you know, backs opponents off with his speed. But I think the biggest thing though, to pivot, the one who stood out to me more than anyone was Keandre Miller last night. Talk about, you know, it took him, and I think you can see, because it's such, after that first game, obviously I had said there was my concerns about his ability, maybe his reads or ability to, you know, and he made a few mistakes he got in that first game. He got turnstiled a few times and he missed a few checks, or he overcommitted at certain times. And I'm like, oh boy, he's going to have to, but lo and behold, last night he's stepping up and he's using his skating and he's knocking down pucks. You know, so that there's that one thing they were trying to get it clear, and he's 6'5", so he just jumps up and grabs a puck that the Islanders are trying to high clear into the corner, and he throws it down while he's still skating. And you just see, it's just natural to him, and that's why he has progressed so quickly. You know, he's only been playing defense since high school. It's crazy, but he just, his natural abilities make things easy for him, or easier. And you could just see that he was a his underlying statistics last night were monstrous. And that's the thing, is that he's, as he gets more comfortable eventually stepping up and snuffing things out and transition the neutral zone, which is his forte, because he was obviously tentative that first game, like, he's going to be a stud. Like, he was jumping into play, he was taking shots, he was evading guys with quick moves, and it's just, you can't, he's so rangy, is that it's not like you can, usually guys can get draped and get their stick in on you, but he's just, yeah, like, guys couldn't, he could, he was getting, he was evading pressure like a guy who's maybe 4 or 5 inches shorter than him with his skating, you know what I mean? So I'm so excited about his future. It's so bright. You know, he's still going to have some developments, because it's not the, listen, I, as the Islanders were pretty much almost as bad as the Rangers were in their first game, you know, and it sucks for Sorokin. It seems, you know, I think it was Clutterbuck, because Varlamov was supposed to start. So who knows if Varlamov's a net for them and they get some few saves, yeah, like, who knows if maybe the Rangers are, especially if they don't get that early goal, maybe they don't have it through the whole, you know, keep going, keep the pedal down. But listen, they didn't. The Islanders did him no favors. They should have known that they have their, unexpectedly, now that he, Sorokin has to start, and they have to, yeah, they have to insulate him and they have to help him out. And they left the that kid out to dry. So that really sucks for him. But yeah, it's good for the Rangers. And man, it was just, like I said, it was a tale of two games. It was literally a mirror image of that first game in terms of the dominance of one team to the other. And what was the score of that final? What was the final score of the first game? Was it 5-0?
4-0, Islanders. Got it.
Nice. So we, not only did we replicate that, we one-upped them. So I'm happy with that.
Yeah. Listen, I was a little worried with K'Andre the first game, not going to lie. I mean, I wasn't worried that, like, you know, we're screwed with him. I'm just a little worried. It's just like, you know, the last game he really played was college hockey, and it's like, that's not even remotely close to the NHL. So he was seeing this really for the first time, and you can tell, you know, gathering the puck on his stick, he was a little shaky, a little nervous, you know, just the, even the, he had one play, I think, with Panarin. It was almost like a give and go, and you can tell he just wasn't ready. He was just kind of standing watching Panarin play, which, I mean, how can you not, you know, at that age, you know, you could finally get up there and you know, you see Panarin streaking up and down the ice. It's just like, oh, my God, like, I can't believe I'm here. But last night, I mean, he just played a more comfortable game. You can just tell he was just, you know, played within himself. I'm sure it was nice to have the play with a lead, you know, be relied upon a little bit more and not so much stressful situations. The Islanders really didn't press. Every single time I felt like they had the puck in the offensive zone, they took a stupid penalty. I mean, Barzal, just every other shift was taking a penalty. I mean, it was great. It was just honestly a perfect game to get his legs under his feet and, or get his, you know, whatever the expression is.
His feet under him, yeah.
His feet under him, and just, you know, and even, you know, talk about Lafreniere too, because we didn't really talk to him about him that much. You know, you just see he's just so... You see, so if you feel like he's been in the league for a few years,
yeah,
you know, and what I mean.
It's, yeah, like, and sorry, not to cut you off, but the thing with him is that you could, because I still see he's figuring. There are some things that he's the pace is not too much for him, and you could tell because he's involved. I think he's always in a good spot, and he's trying to create, and he's making good stuff. At times, you can see he's getting used to the stronger opponents. He got thrown off some pucks because he's used to being a man amongst boys, you know what I mean? And now he's just in a very advanced young man against older men who are still maybe a little bit stronger than him. But I mean, just the fact that he doesn't look out of place in his first game, because he was one of the few that actually looked pretty decent that first game, you know? And now you just see he's slowly feeling it out, especially playing with Panarin. You know, they had some few nice, like, cross-ice feeds. And that, you know, at their best moments last year, Panarin and Strom were playing keep away from the far wings, finding guys in the corners where there was no, because only they had that vision. Lafreniere clearly has that vision, and he does deft little puck touches. You could kind of sense him feeling out, like, some of the things he would do, like, understanding, like, oh, okay, this is ice that would be given to me, you know, what I'm used to in, like, the queue, and it's not there anymore. You know what I mean? So he was just kind of figuring out. But I think once he makes those little mental notes, like, all right, I can do this, I can't do that, like, I have to do this if I want to do this, like, he's going to be, the kid's going to be an absolute monster. You know what I mean? He had a nice, a few shots on goal. He had nice hard shots. And yeah, I like, you know, the fact that he can already cycle the puck, like, he's been in the league for so long, is such an encouraging sign. Like, he understands how to use his teammates and find them. So yeah, not worried about him. It's going to be, when he scores his first goal, it's going to be amazing. But yeah, and obviously, like I said, if he gets, him getting top 6 minutes is a good thing. And I think even Joe and Sam touched on it, is that even though he's, you know, they had him switching sides, Panarin is the type of winger that he just takes whatever ice you give him. So they crisscross a lot. And if that can confuse coverage, I mean, because they're both so smart that they can both do that, you know what I mean? They're either, because Lafreniere is a dual threat player. He can, and as is Panarin, they can both amazing playmakers, but they both have lethal shots, you know what I mean, and can score goals. So if they can just switch at will, with Strome kind of as like a little control tower in the center, like, that's a deadly combination. And you even saw that towards the, Lafreniere was like, and Panarin were joking around and talking, and Lafreniere's like hugging him and, you know, got his arm around him, and St. Panarin's going over him and laughing, joking with him. I mean, that's the guy you want to, if that's who you want to attach your budding superstar to, right? You know,
because yeah.
We say all this, and he has, you know, as good as he's looked, but Panarin, after, you know, a really rough first game, and he was bad the first game. He just wasn't himself. He looked like he was trying to do something. He wasn't Panarin. But last night, holy Moses, was he Panarin. He was dangerous. Every time he had the puck, he just knew he was bailing his teammates out when they needed it. And then he was also doing that thing where he can cherry pick sometimes, and he scored on that Panarin breakaway with that beautiful snapshot. And man, he was just dangerous every time he had the puck. So yeah, it's like I said, it's tale of two games. They were as good last night as they were bad that first game.
Yeah, and you know, it's just watching Lafreniere away from the puck too. Just, he accelerates at the right time. You know, he's back checking through the middle. You just see, you know, just so much maturity to his game. You honestly wouldn't be able to pick that kid up if someone said, point out the rookie on the lineup. I don't know if you could pick him up. I think you'd probably pick out Howden, if anything, just the way he carries himself. But Lafreniere looks like a pro already. You know, it's amazing. And even Gibby was complimenting him on his facial hair. You know, he goes, this kid's gonna have, you know, a nice playoff beard, you know, and you know, hopefully we get to that point. Hopefully it's this year. But yeah, you know, just Lafreniere, just, I mean, I know he doesn't have a point yet, and I know, you know, obviously he doesn't have that elusive first goal, but his play so far, you know, I'm very impressed with. And you know, especially last game, just his overall, you know, his game, even away from the puck, is just, you know, I do think he does have some work to do with the puck. You can tell he sometimes, you know, definitely thinks he's got a little bit more time than he probably is used to, but that's, you know, obviously that's going to happen. But I'm really, you know, excited, you know, his play away from the puck, just his movement and synergy with Panarin last night was, you know, perfect.
What is up, everybody? Mikey CLT here from Bar Down Breakdown, letting you know that our 100th episode is going to be dropping exclusively on the Hockey Podcast Network on January 27th. We will be joined by special guest Derek from the amazing pop punk band State Champs. Make sure you subscribe and follow us on all our socials so you do not miss any of our amazing episodes. We are so pumped that we have made it to episode 100. And to thank you, we are running an Instagram contest where one lucky winner can win a Steez brand snapback hat. So head over to our Instagram and enter our contest. Also, if you are just hearing about Bar Down Breakdown, make sure you go and check out our 99 other episodes where we have had artists who have been nominated for Grammys, all the way down to artists who are unsigned, where we dive into the crossover between alternative music and hockey. So make sure you go and check out Bar Down Breakdown wherever you listen to podcasts, brought to you exclusively by the Hockey Podcast Network.
Should we transition to the elephant in the room, and that's our defense?
Yeah.
All right. A lot of questions here. I think the biggest elephant in the room is number 27, Jack Johnson. Your thoughts? Just I'm going to throw it out there.
I mean, listen, he was that first game. And in fairness, none of the team, no one was good. Very few Rangers were good, if at all, in that first game. So, you know, we were obviously harping on Johnson because he was maybe looked like among the worst. Played limited minutes last night and was, yeah, it was fine. Didn't create much, but also didn't made the plays he had to. You can just tell that he's kind of a bit of a relic from a bygone era, and he just doesn't have the skill to, like, if he tries to, if he's like, I'm going to skate the puck out of danger and then turn up ice and try to rifle a pass, it just doesn't have the same zip. It's not as accurate, but he, you know, he was fine last night. But I think because obviously I think in Ranger fans' head, you're like, we're not splitting up Fox and Lindgren, but honestly, it seemed to really work last night. And Brendan Smith, who has been, his tenure as a Ranger has been, there's been no middle ground. And I think that's why he's at times been on the outs, because it's either, he's either really doing a good job. He gets that beautiful breakout pass to Panarin, and he was physical and he just was steady, you know. And his other problem is usually he takes a lot of penalties. Didn't, you know, he was played within himself. Now, I think, you know, Tony, make Tony and Smith your third pairing. And listen, if you have to put Johnson in every now and then, and as long as he's getting limited minutes, it is what it is. I mean, he's here. They're going to use him. There's nothing, I guess, we can do about that as Ranger fans. But as far as a defense, I wouldn't change a thing. I would roll with Lindgren, Trouba, put Fox and Keandre together, and then have Smith on the left and Tony on the right.
Bingo.
Right?
There's a lot of controversy right now, but because I don't think DQ is going to sit Johnson. I don't know what he's going to do. You can't sit anybody else. And if he sits Miller, I'm going to, Andy, I don't even know what I'm going to do. I can't even say it on the podcast.
Yeah. But I don't think he'll sit Miller. Cause I think if anything with Keandre, one of the main reasons they're here is they want him to develop, and they're not going to like, but who knows, you know, cause like you said, he's had made some questionable sitting and lineup decisions at times. And listen, let me say this. I understand Johnson was bad. And I do think as a fan, like I obviously would sit him. I can't say I necessarily disagreed with him with Ben sitting Tony, even though Tony was a mixed bag and that he took a real bad penalty, but at the same time, he's one of the few guys that can create with his naturals. Like, I get it. I totally understand it. I think the one thing is that in a game where at that point in that game for him to take the extra, you know, double minor, it's like one of those things where it's like, if you have any chance of coming back in that game, that almost snuffs it out. So I say that's not what I would do, but when I think about it, I'm like, I don't know if I necessarily think it was the wrong move. It clearly worked, and hopefully it sends a message, because like the season is so short, and you have to be sit on your leads, or if you're going to come back, you have to mitigate chances. And the Rangers just took way too many penalties, and to just something that you already took the penalty, even if you think it's unfair. If you want to give your team any chance, you cannot, whatever. I don't know what he said. I don't know if he called the ref like a fucking idiot. I don't know if I don't think it was just from slamming the door, because that's not, you know what I mean?
He called him a fucking clown. You have fucking rabbit ears. You're a fucking joke. You're a fucking clown. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. That was David Quinn last year. Never mind.
Yeah, but listen, I mean, I would obviously have Tony come in for Jack Johnson in my now, because it seemed they found some stability. But yeah, at the same time, like I said, I'm usually a little bit more like, I don't care, because Tony's one of the few guys who can create, but you know, he was bad, and they could have stopped the bleeding, and he plunged the knife deeper. So
I'll be honest with you, is that game they weren't coming back from. That's like saying if Barzell didn't take that, a penalty in the offensive zone, Islanders would have came back. There was no coming back from
but
that.
But even Barry benched Barzell last night. And
yeah, but is he
going to
sit Barzell the next game for what he did? It's like, listen, Quinn, I understand what you're trying to do. And I know Quinn is obviously a newer coach in this league. And he's probably trying to show that, you know, he's not going to take that crap. And listen, I agree with him. You know, Tony, at that point, you can't let your emotions get the best of you. You know, you're part of the only way this team can come back is you know, willfully bring the puck down the ice. There's only a couple players that are going to start offense like that. Tony's one of them, Zibanejad, Panarin. You know, there's only a select few that can really have that burst of speed, shoot down the ice and create something. But, you know, at the same time, too, it's like, listen, this isn't JV. This isn't high school hockey anymore. This is the NHL. You play your best players. And it's clear to me that Johnson was a huge step behind everyone else last game. Tony wasn't great, but he was still probably our best defenseman overall, given his, you know, offensive play, especially on the power play, that has been god-awful. And we need to talk about that next, Andy, because our special teams is going to absolutely murder us down the line. You know, I just think that this early in the season, everyone came out flat. You had a guy that kind of shows a little bit of emotion. That's something that you don't bench the guy for. That's something that, you know, you might get in his ear. And then after the game, you say, like, listen, man, it's one of those games. Let's learn from it and let's move on and let's go. Obviously, Tony has a history of being a hothead, you know, but at the same time, it's like, please, like, it's just, I don't know what Tony's future is with the New York Rangers. And I doubt, given our talent depth at defense, that it's going to be here much longer. But, you know, sitting him right now is not the problem. And honestly, play them so, you know, he does put up the numbers, and then maybe move him to try to bring in a freaking center that we clearly need, because our faceoff sucks. Our faceoff percentage is absolute garbage. And our special teams has been absolutely shit, Andy. And I want to move on to that. But, you know, anything more on the defense? I mean, basically, it's just you got to swap Tony and Johnson. It's clear as day.
I think that's probably that's the move I would make. And listen, I understand, even if I'm not what I would have done. And I don't really get it at times. Like, he's here. They're clearly going to use him. And yeah, I don't know. It is what it is. It's going to be where the Rangers are the most vulnerable this season. But obviously, if K'Andre is on the development path he's on right now, that it can shore up pretty quickly. Cause Trouba was great last night. He was god awful that first game, and he was amazing last night, because he is one, maybe the only player on this team that he can get in a battle in the corner, and, you know, give a guy a little bit of a rough ride, or like fight back, or, you know, be aggressive. If a guy's trying to if an Islander's trying to pressure him, he can immediately tack them back to kind of get them to back off a bit. If they think they're just going to swarm him and try to cross check him in the back, he can either reverse hit them or lay it on him. And then he can get his skating out and turn up ice and fire. And yeah, he had shots on goal and he was just shooting at will. And yeah, that's the thing, is that he needs to be engaged to do that. So if we can have that Trouba on the ice at all times with Lindgren, who is, again, flying under the radar, what a warrior this kid is. He's busted open every other game. He almost doesn't play well unless he his face looks like a hamburger, you know?
They said it, so it hasn't even been a period yet, and Lindgren's nose is bleeding. It's officially hockey's back.
Yeah, he's taking that mantle from Girardi taking punishment. But he seems to, it gets him involved, and he just doesn't, he's got the little beard going now, and he doesn't take crap, and I love that. And honestly, Fox was amazing last night too. He was creating all over the ice, and that's what you want. And you think about it, is that, you got to, like I said, you have to give credit to Brendan Smith. If he can come in and just stabilize things, and eventually, like you said, if you can, I think if you put Tony with him, and then you just keep Lindgren and Trouba, because Lindgren has actually shown he can skate pucks out. I think when Trouba gets put with more similar partners or stationary partners, he kind of suffers, but I think him and Lindgren just have that thing that they're both committed to. He's going to back, you know, they'll back each other in physical situations, whereas like a guy like Fox might be a little bit more tentative. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And even though as good as Lindgren and Fox have looked at times, I just think for the way that Trouba plays, he's not super fast. It's not like he's going to get back to a puck and be able to get it off immediately. He might have to fight for it first. But if you have a guy like Lindgren who's not afraid to get in the trenches with you and help you win it and then do something with it, then yeah, that'll be a good recipe for success. And then obviously Keandre and Fox can have a little bit more give and go because they're both maybe have a little bit more offensive flair, and you know, Keandre's ability to just skate, and Fox can then scan, and he's like, all right, I can then get to stay back here and I can run the point once we gain possession in the offensive zone. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, so that's, and that's, they're going to have to figure this stuff out now, but you know, if going forward a Fox, yeah, man, it's just Fox Keandre pair would be absolutely incredible, you know, just because in terms of what the potential is. So yeah, I guess as far as our defense, like I said, it's going to be our weakness potentially going forward. But at the same time, there is room for improvement this season, which is something I couldn't have said about last year because, you know, we didn't have Keandre and Fox was another, and Lindgren weren't another season older where it's like more than being expected of them now. You know what I mean? It's like they were trying to put everything on Trouba and Shea. And I think if any, everyone can pull the rope a little bit more, and if Jacques Martin over time, the system can, whatever his system is, can kick in, then yeah, I think there is room for improvement. So, but yeah, that remains to be seen, but it clearly is going to have to be, we're going to live and die by it, unfortunately.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how things shake up because Quinn is not really a man of consistency with lines and pairings. So it'll be interesting to see the different pairings along the way, because, you know, when we have a bad game, which, you know, we will eventually, you know, he's going to shake things up again. And I'm curious to see, you know, where, you know, the pieces lie. Another big, I guess, is like another elephant in the room, but no one really seems to talk about it other than, you know, a possible trade with Columbus to bring in Pierre-Luc Dubois, is our center depth, which is absolutely dismal right now. Our faceoff percentage is god awful. I wrote a blog in the beginning of the, before the season started, basically, you know, three things that are going to cripple us, you know, our one is our D zone coverage, you know, that's got to improve from last year, which I don't think we have enough of a, you know, I don't think we have enough games under our belt for me to really critique it. You know, second would be our faceoff percentage and, you know, just winning faceoffs and how that, you know, translates to possession and scoring opportunities in the offensive zone and clearings when you're in the defensive zone. And then, you know, the third thing was special teams. And I thought our special teams and our, you know, faceoff percentage was absolutely horrendous. You know, Andy, center depth, what are we going to do? Who are we going to trade? What, like, what's going to happen here? Because I really do think we need somebody this season because we're not going to make the playoffs if we don't have a clear number two center.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because like you said, it's that because Panarin and to a lesser extent, you could even see Lafreniere kind of assume that role. It's just, I think it's in the sense that the defenseman is relied upon, or excuse me, the center is usually relied upon to be the more defensive element on that line. And I think it's clear that the way this Rangers roster is constructed, especially with the talent they have on the wings, that you just, it's, yeah, the need for, and I don't think Hedl, unfortunately, is really there yet. He still seems more of an offensive-minded player. They clearly lack a guy who can just be solid to stabilize that middle six with a defensive presence, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't even have to be, you know, he doesn't have to be the most offensive player in the world. It's just they clearly need it. Like a Philip Deneau type would be amazing on this team. So, as for the PLD rumors, like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Columbus would want to trade it in division, but obviously he's a guy I would love to have. I don't know what it would take to get him. So I kind of am afraid of that, especially if it costs, you know, if they want a player in return, I assume obviously Philip Hedl wouldn't get it done. So at what point is like all of a sudden it's like if you're like a Hedl, you know, a first or Vitali Kravtsov, like, you know, all of a sudden I'm like, I don't know. But I mean, not to pour more gasoline on the fire, but what's Buffalo's record right now?
I think they're 1-1, right?
Did that they win the other night?
I don't. I'm assuming they just won one. That Buffalo. No, they're 0-2, I guess.
I don't. Yeah. Okay. Well.
Well, you know what's funny? I feel like everyone except for me and you feel like they make fun of me for saying Eichel's gonna come.
You know, I mean, if they do everything he asked and they still can't get into the playoffs, like what? Like he
Buffalo's 0-2.
When what year was the McDavid draft? The Eichel and McDavid draft?
Oh,
was it 2017?
Yeah.
Four years into your career and you haven't made the playoffs on a team that hasn't made the playoffs in a decade. Like at what point? Like at least Edmonton, I think they missed 1 year with McDavid, right? But they've been in every other year since, right?
I'm sorry. 2015.
Yeah. It's you're gonna be 6 years. Like, you know, McDavid, yeah, we forget. Like him and Eichel's 24 years old. You're going to have 5 years left to your 30 and you haven't been in the playoffs once. Like, but no, he's going to stay. Like, come on, man. Like, listen. And I understand why it's like, it just seems like you're being a hater and like you can't have nice things. But at the same point, it's like, it's not fair to these guys. You know what? Even if it's, you know what? And I think there's a chance, even if he doesn't come to the Rangers, he might just go elsewhere. Cause like, it doesn't have to be the Rangers. I'm just saying, like, he put that, there's no coincidence that was out there. He's trying to spurn them to do something. But if they do something and it just still isn't enough, at what point is enough enough? You know what I mean?
I mean, like, there's, I would imagine every team in the league would make room for Jack Eichel.
Yeah. And the Rangers would probably offer up, you know, especially if they're trying to, you know, I don't know, like the Rangers would offer up a pretty package for him. You know, there's the stories like he's already played for Quinn before, if Quinn is still here, you know, and Jack has said his favorite, his taking warmups in MSG is his like favorite thing in the NHL because you're in the city and he gets to go no bucket, although he won't. He'll have to wear a bucket with the Rangers, but just like the energy, like he's already said that. And clearly he put it out that New York was a team he'd be very interested in, you know, if things went down, like these aren't not coincidences. You know what I mean? And listen, I understand if you're a Buffalo fan, much like if you're a Columbus fan, you don't want to hear this stuff and it stinks. I want you guys, I want Buffalo to be good. I think that market would be amazing with their team in the postseason. Finally, again, you know, they're a loyal market. They get their view, you know, their fans out no matter what in their view numbers, but they haven't been rewarded. The Pegulas are just, they don't put the right places and they draft Jack Quinn instead of Marco Rossi. Like they just clearly I just don't get, you know, there's just, they don't have the right people in the right spots. So
yeah. And I feel like you and I know when a bad team is being ran because, you know, I know I'm a Met Jet fan, and I think you lean towards those teams also, right? I don't see you as being a Yankee or Giant fan. But, like, we know when a bad organization is a bad organization. Buffalo is, the Sabres are one of those organizations. And you know, you saw the quick turnaround that the Bills had when they drafted Allen, and now the city is, you know, at, you know, all it is Buffalo Bills. And I'm sure that drives Eichel crazy because he's like, how long have I been here? You know, I want to make the playoffs. I want to make this city go nuts. Like, and eventually, you know, that wears on you. And it's got to be mentally draining for him to watch, you know, the other team in his city, you know, have so much success and a quick turnaround and a quick rebuild. And, you know, here he is just, you know, a bottom feeder once again. I don't know. I do think it just is. It is a perfect situation, a perfect fit. But I know Jack Eichel will not be retiring as a Buffalo Sabres. That I know. Whether he's a New York Ranger, I'm not sure. But I'd be remiss to find a better place for Jack Eichel right now in the NHL.
Yeah, and like I said, not trying to be a hater. I just think. That it's reasonable to say that he understands that if he wants, it's like, you know, there has to be some success. I mean, Duchesne wanted out because he only made the playoffs, what, his first season with Colorado. And look, and now, and listen, now they're good. So maybe that's one of those things that I could see it being some weird thing where he leaves and then there's this weird resentment in their locker room. And that kind of drives them to all pull the rope a little bit more out of spite and then actually get into the playoffs. That's happened to a lot of franchises. It's kind of funny how that happens, right? Like,
oh, it happens all the time.
Exactly. You know, so, but it's just, yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not putting, if Buffalo is close, then he'll probably stay and say like, all right, I see the trajectory, but you know, if it's just not enough, you know, and listen, I feel bad because this is the hardest division to get into the playoffs. And if the Rangers don't get in, it sucks, but you can say, look, we have all this talent. They're still on the up and up. Eichel's, like I said, he's 24, 20, going to be 25 years old, or he is 25 years old. Like, you know, the time's a ticking. It was just yesterday. He was a rookie, you know, coming into the league, young superstar. And all of a sudden, like how far away that moment is like, oh, Jack Eichel's already 26. He's 4 years till he's 30. Like how much more prime, you know what I mean? Like kick, you need a lot of kicks at the can. So I think, yeah, I'm just, again, not, yeah, you know, I hate to be the guy, you know, the guy holding the match with the gasoline, but it's just like, you know, I don't know, man. But listen, I think the one thing we didn't really talk about is, well, I guess I want to have a question. You asked me the question. I want to ask you, are you concerned about the way Shesterkin looked in game one?
I mean, yeah, obviously that is concerning. You know, I thought he let in a couple softies. He just didn't look himself, but neither did the rest of the team. And that's what I'm going to hang my hat on, is the fact that it wasn't just goaltending. It wasn't just the defense. It wasn't just the forwards. It wasn't just the coaching. Everyone was off their game. I mean, Quinn got out coached. Our forwards got outworked. Our defense were not engaged at all in the play in our own zone, in the offensive zone, in the neutral zone. They weren't active. And you know what? Shesterkin, he stunk. I can't defend the guy. You know, usually you never want to blame it on goaltending, but you know, sometimes when your forwards or in your D are playing a tough game in front of you, you're expected to make a big save. And he never really made those saves. I felt like he was fighting the puck all night long. The one shot that Barzal had with Tony, I felt like he should have had that one. I mean, you know, Tony kind of like pushed him a little bit to the outside, and you know, Barzal's got that quick release and it was a rocket and perfect shot, but still it's like that stuff you need to stop. And it's just like, you know, everything that could have went bad that game. So I'm going to chalk it up as in the universe just wasn't on the Rangers side, Thursday night. So I'll leave it at that. The one thing I'll say, Georgie, you know, obviously came in and it was just like the total opposite, where you just felt like he wasn't even challenged. He was just moving, you know, side to side with ease. He, you know, saw the puck from every direction that was, you know, thrown at him. You know, we got lucky with a post. You know, it just felt like everything went George's way and everything went, you know, the opposite for Chesty.
And I'll say this about Guriev, that he has, I think one thing that he has in his arsenal that I think a lot of other goaltenders don't have is, like, some goaltenders understand, like, the easy snare and then, like, looking calm. Because you saw that Shesterkin, the way the Islanders were pressuring and crashing the net from all angles, he looked like it was backing him up a little bit, and he was unsure, and like he'd go to make a save, but then he'd like kind of like really compress and get little, like, because he's like bracing for impact, and then you're kind of more focused on that and not if you accidentally don't, if you let a rebound or if it squeaks out. Yeah, and he was losing pucks he usually have. Georgiev, as Islanders are trying to bear down, as they put a shot on net and they follow it up, he would snare it and then not move. And like kind of snare it with like a too easy pizzazz and like put it to his hip and just kind of stand there. You know what I mean? Like the Islanders are trying to create and he just snuffs it out. Like, nope, like snare out of sky. Like, we're going to stop, whistle. And you could see it kind of demoralize them a bit. And even then the onus is like, they're trying to crash the net and they almost have to like stop because they're like, this guy made the save. And if I get a barrel into him, my team's going to go for a penalty for, like, you know, for charging the goaltender. You know what I mean? So he was understood that, especially because in camp it was like, oh, he at times looked shakier and Shesterkin looked like, you know, clearly a little bit better. well, yeah, this was a good game for him. And that's the thing. I don't worry about Shesterkin after that one game. Like everyone, like you said, everyone was bad. I don't think Sorokin was as bad as we saw. I will say that I think Shesterkin having AHL time was very good for him. So if the Islanders think they're just going to ease Sorokin into the NHL, I don't know, man. Maybe letting him go to the AHL just for a little bit might be the best way. But hey, listen, if they want to throw him to the Wolves and try to get him to just like that, far be it for me to tell them otherwise. But yeah, I think this tandem has the potential to be one of the best, not only in the East division, but in the league. You know what I mean? I think we obviously have to hope that Shesterkin doesn't have any like lingering, like, oh man, like no Hank, I am expected to be the guy type feelings. And Georgiev, yeah, I love the way that Georgiev, when he knows it's like he can take the spotlight, he does it. You know what I mean? So his numbers are very up and down sometimes in his performances in the past, but when he's on, man, he's on. And that's good to have. If you can have a guy who's maybe a little bit more steady in Shesterkin, but then a guy who just in Georgiev, who is maybe a little less so, but then every now and then he's just hot, and you can, yeah, that's a great backup to have. Or not even backup, I guess a 1B, if you want to call it that. But yeah, I personally am not worried about Shesterkin. Hopefully, you know, I know he was down for a little bit. He got, guys were crashing to the net. Hopefully he's not any lingering soreness or anything from that. But yeah, I think clearly if the team, you know, he's not going to have Lundqvist took the brunt of, you know, I think we're, as fans, are going to realize Lundqvist took so much criticism from some portion of the fan base now about, you know, these things that, yeah, that's gone now. You don't have that same thing. Well, oh, you know, Igor would have had that or whatever. Well, why is he starting? It's going to be, you know, it is what it is now. So you have to live with it. So fans better be ready, because I love Shesterkin. I think he's a supremely talented. But every goaltender in the league, I don't care who you are, you're going to have games where you look like absolute crap because it's goaltending and it's hard. You know what I mean? So
right. And let's not forget, Hank at the beginning of NHL seasons was usually god awful. Like,
yeah,
he took until like game 10 to really find his rhythm, where you're like, okay, Hank's back. Like, relax, everyone. You know, and you know, I think it's something that you might have to, you know, bear the same load with, you know, Shesterkin and Georgie. I mean, Georgie played great, but, you know, let's give these guys a couple games each to really find their rhythm. And, you know, hopefully the team plays as well as they did yesterday, you know, in the future for, you know, Shesterkin, because, you know, I really felt like the amount of shots, and you're right, I mean, they were crashing the net, they were doing everything correct, but I really do think the amount of shots being thrown and the quality shots that he was having to face so early on really never got him into a set groove. You know, it just felt like every single time, you know, every single time he like finally got into a rhythm, they scored another one. And it was so early on in the game that he just, you know, everything collapsed. You know, it was just like a house of cards. It just collapsed once they got their third goal. So, again, brushing it off, not too worried about it. I think this falls more on the play in front of the goaltending than the actual goaltending itself. And, you know, overall, looking at the two games, the same opponent and how different they were, it all comes down to energy. It comes down to engagement, and it comes down to outnumbering the puck everywhere on the ice. The Rangers did not do that game one. They did do that game two. And you just saw, you know, the potential that this team has. And I really do think that's why the fan base goes absolutely bonkers when we lay an egg like that, is because we know that's not New York Rangers hockey. And I'm not saying we're going to go out and smoke everybody 5-0 now. But, you know, there's got to be fight. There's got to be energy. There's got to be some sort of, like, you know, passion in the game. And you just didn't see that game one. And, you know, even if you lost 3-2 and it was a close one, you know, I think the fan base would have been fine with that. But you cannot, you know, be playing these games where there's just zero energy, zero preparation. And you said it brilliantly at the beginning of the podcast. You just never felt like there was a plan B for the Rangers. Okay, well, this is not working for us. What do we do now? There was no trap. There was no 1-2-2 in the neutral zone to kind of slow the Islanders down. There was nothing. And, you know, there's got to be some sort of backup plan, because you can't rely on, you know, Panarin and Zibanejad scoring a goal in the beginning of the game, you know, to get us on the right track. You know, it's got to be, you know, there's got to be points in our, you know, back pocket, you know, on games that we play bad because we push it into overtime. And that can't be on the goaltending either, you know, to steal a point on the road against the Flyers. You know, that's got to be a full team effort. Everyone's got to be pulling the rope at the same time. And, you know, it's going to be tough, and it's going to be tough, because, you know, we're going to be, you know, we're going to have a lot of rookies playing this year. And I don't know, man, I penciled the Rangers in to maybe find that third spot, but, you know, maybe we aren't there yet. And, you know, that's more my fault than anything for getting my hopes up, Andy.
Well, so looking ahead, as we wrap this podcast up, we have the New Jersey Devils on Tuesday night, right? And then we play the Penguins on Friday. Is that correct? Or Thursday?
Yes. I think
it's Tuesday and Friday.
Tuesday, Friday.
Yeah. Devils actually, don't look so bad, right? They've, under head coach Lindy Ruff, they looked at least competitive with who they play in their first game. Was it the Bruins? They played the Bruins twice, and they won an OT the other night, and then they lost their first game. But I think they lost in a shootout or overtime the first game.
I think they lost in a shootout.
I've heard, so defensively, they've definitely seemed like they've shored up things a bit, which, you know, so I think if the Rangers played the way they played tonight, I think they can, I think they can win, obviously. I still think the Islanders are a better team at this point than the Devils, although you can argue the Devils, much like the Rangers, they have a little bit more individual skill to do things. And, Jack Hughes is starting to look a little bit better, you know. Still has a bit of a muffin shot, but at the same time, it's like, the kid is getting more confidence and he can create. So they're going to have to watch out for that. Hopefully it was a lesson that like you said, it's about energy and it's about moving your feet and not playing. Quinn calls it hope hockey, where you just kind of make passes and hope someone else will do the work to get to it. And yeah, it's kind of accurate. You have to move your feet. So I think if the Rangers can move their feet against this Devils team, I think they can overwhelm them. But listen, they have to be ready. I think, assuming that they're going to have as easy a time as they had against the Devils last year at times, I think that's a recipe for disaster, because, you know, Sharangovich looks pretty, or sorry, excuse me, Sharangovich looks pretty good, man. He was
so
good
was
for
Ty
them in
Smith,
the
angel. Man.
Yeah, Ty Smith. You know, the Gibby has never been high on Ty Smith, but I think he looked great and he's got a few points, right? So yeah, they look good. I think if you want to exploit them, you have to lean on them a bit. And because I think, you know, if ultimately still, I think the Rangers have a much more deadly top six right now, especially with, I don't think the Devils, you know, they're going to be without Heischer still, I think, right? And they don't have a player of the caliber of Panarin or Zibanejad just yet. And that's not even counting the guys who are finding their ways, your Lafreniers and your Kakos and Buchnevich. And if Buchnevich can continue to be just as dominant as he was the other night, like, look out. Like, imagine if Buchnevich becomes the next sort of, you know, he maybe not as good a player as a Huberto, but if he becomes that guy, like, oh man, that guy, like, if they're like Buchnevich is like, although this, we're only playing a 50, you know, six game season, but like, if all of a sudden you, at the end of the season, you're like, wow, Buchnevich has like 46 points or something, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, close to a little under a point per game, or, you know, close to it, it'd be like, oh man, you know? So yeah, if he kind of prorates to, or just like a 60 point player, like, that's awesome. That's great for the Rangers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and, you know, listen, Buch is going to have to play a big role on this team. You know, being so young, he is a guy that has, you know, the experience. You know, games against the Devils are going to matter a lot, because you need to beat the teams that are, you know, on the lower tier of the NHL right now. And especially when the Devils are missing guys like Nico. And, you know, I felt like I watched the Bruins game with them, where the Devils won in overtime. Man, the Bruins just sat back. They did not attack them at all. They never strung together a few shifts where they were really pounding the Devils. The Devils took it, you know, to them. And, you know, again, it's going to come down to the Rangers' energy. If the Rangers can outnumber the puck and force them to play in their own zone, we're going to have an easy time winning this hockey game. But if we're going to sit back and think that, you know, the play is just going to come to them, the scoring chances are just going to happen, we're going to get burnt. And, you know, the Devils have enough talent to beat you. And, you know, it's a rivalry game. So Devils and Rangers, regardless of who's on the roster, those games are always going to be tough regardless. So expect the game to be physical, emotional, and, you know, they're going to have to, you know, play like they did on Saturday to get 2 points.
Yeah, well said. Well, thank you everyone for listening to this episode. We're so happy that Rangers hockey is back, and especially, you know, that winning feeling. I had to watch the game on a bit of a delay, so I DVR'd it. So by the time I was finished, it was close to like 11 o'clock at night. But even not watching live and acting like it was live, it was, oh man, it was such a good feeling. It was that feeling I've been chasing since probably last March, right? Where you're just watching them score and just put out a good effort. And, you know, Kako scoring felt so good, and Buchnevich just developing, and watching Keandre. Oh man, listen, this season's going to be a lot of fun. It'll probably be just as much fun as last season. And even if they come up a little short, there's going to be highs and lows. So, I guess the challenge for them is, can they mitigate those lows? And they're in the most competitive division, I think, in the entire NHL right now with how the way they've redrawn it. So, yeah, they're going to have to be on. They can't, it's been said that they're not going to be able to take teams by surprise anymore, because now teams are going to game plan for Panarin and Zibanejad. But that leaves room for Kako to show the haters, hey, look, I can have my underlying numbers can be good and I can drive play. And Lafreniere to just, to show that he can, maybe he will have a better adjustment to the National Hockey League than Kako and Hughes did. So, yeah, there's a lot of narratives this year, which is always what fun hockey is about. And I'm ready. So buckle up and let's enjoy the ride. Thank you for listening to the Broadway Boys podcast. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Broadway Boys Pod, and please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, or thehockeypodcastnetwork.com.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network on Twitter at HockeyPodNet. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.